Chapter 88. The eighth wonder of the world, some had called this space, and standing in it now, Langdon was not about to argue with that assessment. As the group stepped across the threshold into the colossal sanctuary, Langdon was reminded that Hagia Sophia required only an instant to impress upon its visitors the sheer magnitude of its proportions. So vast was this room that it seemed to dwarf even the great cathedrals of Europe. The staggering force of its enormity was, Langdon knew, partly an illusion, a dramatic side effect of its Byzantine floor plan. With a centralized naos that concentrated all of its interior space in a single square room, rather than extending it along the four arms of a cruciform, as was the style adopted in later cathedrals. "This building is 700 years older than Notre Dame," Langdon thought. After taking a moment to absorb the breadth of the room's dimensions, Langdon let his eyes climb skyward more than 150 feet overhead to the sprawling golden dome that crowned the room. From its central point, 40 ribs radiated outward like rays of the sun, extending to a circular arcade of 40 arched windows. During daylight hours, the light that streamed through these windows reflected and re-reflected off glass shards embedded in the golden tilework, creating the mystical light for which Hagia Sophia was most famous. Langdon had seen the gilded ambience of this room captured accurately in painting only once, John Singer Sargent. Not surprisingly, in creating his famous painting of Hagia Sophia, the American artist had limited his palette only to multiple shades of a single color, gold. The glistening golden cupola was often called the Dome of Heaven itself, and was supported by four tremendous arches, which in turn were sustained by a series of semi-domes and tympana. These supports were then carried by yet another descending tier of smaller semi-domes and arcades, creating the effect of a cascade of architectural forms working their way from heaven toward earth. Moving from heaven to earth, albeit by a more direct route, long cables descended straight down from the dome and supported a sea of gleaming chandeliers, which seemed to hang so low to the floor that tall visitors risked colliding with them. In reality, this was another illusion created by the sheer magnitude of the space, for the fixtures hung more than 12 feet off the floor. As with all great shrines, Hagia Sophia's prodigious size served two purposes. First, it was proof to God of the great lengths to which man would go to pay tribute to him. And second, it served as a kind of shock treatment for worshippers, a physical space so imposing that those who entered felt dwarfed, their egos erased, their physical being and cosmic importance shrinking to the size of a mere speck in the face of God, an atom in the hands of the Creator. Until a man is nothing, God can make nothing out of him. Martin Luther had spoken those words in the 16th century, but the concept had been part of the mindset of builders since the earliest examples of religious architecture.